opportunities to get together on a regular basis and pray together. That there are a lot, that they take those initiatives, that leadership, they're involved in women's ministry in a lot of different ways. And maybe it's what we talked about a couple weeks ago with Mark, with that they're relational, maybe a little more relational oriented. And so there's that interaction. I'm not sure what that is, but it does seem like, you know, I'm kind of jealous sometimes of what the women are able to accomplish. Some of that is because they're not, at least in our home, you know, Marion's pretty busy, but she doesn't have a job that requires 9 or 10 hours a day. So some of it is the time, but I'm not sure that that's all of it. Just because they have the time doesn't mean that it would happen unless they took the initiative and drove those kind of things. So it seems like in a lot of cases, not to say that the men in this church or any other church are not involved in things, but there's a purpose and an intention and a follow-through with a lot of things in the women's ministry that are consistent, which I think are pretty admirable. Mm-hmm. And to answer your, just address what you were saying, you know, you're right. Those are, I mean, they're leading out in women's ministry, no question about it. You know, Todd, and I think, you know, how do we as men train our sons to do that, to really move the church forward in those kind of things? I think it's pretty broad brush with those kind of things. But I think to your point, I see that as being purposeful and intentional at what we do to make sure that we are really given what's left to the Lord, but which would be easy to do if we gave it all at work and at home and with our own hobbies, then we give what's left to God.
Yeah, there was a point. Go to Robin and Eddie.
I don't know if this helps, but if those of you that were in the leadership class that we had, Tim and I went through, we talked about Bill Heibels, I think he's in Fort Worth.
Chicago.
Chicago, that's right. He has a model, or he talks about big L leadership and little L leadership in the church, and I think maybe you're asking us about is if we use that as more of the big L leadership, like the kind of church-wide, and I think, what Todd just said, that little L leadership, I think that is, it's a miss that there is sort of women in those roles. I mean, like in our children's ministry, I mean, in those kind of things, I think there is certainly, leadership women has leadership in that thing. And I think it also is a service. I mean, and I think we talked about in that leadership class, but I mean, the model that Jesus had of leadership was a service model, really. So I'm not sure we can really, he's a part of leadership and service.
Yeah.
But I think maybe, again, he kind of delineated there were, at least in Protestant churches, and some of you have it, there's a different concept of male leadership versus, which would be like the big L leadership. Mm-hmm. And they have the sort of the little L leadership that all members can have through the way they serve the church. Mm-hmm. And does that make sense? Is that sort of what you're talking about? Or is that, I don't know if that helps people kind of figure out where we're talking about the more direction and mission of the church as a whole, yeah, as opposed to the way that the church.
Okay. Eddie?
Well, using Rob's terminology, just to say, one of the things that strikes me coming here from working with several other congregations is the age demographics of our group are dramatically different than a lot of the congregations we've worshipped in. I mean, to the point that, you know, there are certain advantages that most congregations have that have a lot of older experienced Christians we can't tap. I mean, we worked with several congregations that had people in their 60s who were full-time elders that had quit their jobs and were working full-time. And that's pretty common now in a lot of congregations. We have this, I think it's almost unique, and I don't think anybody might be saying so. I mean, we have people in big L leadership positions that in a lot of and it puts pressure on families, and I think that it's an issue that I haven't heard openly discussed. I'm sure it's discussed in the, you know, in some groups, but how we compensate essentially for that seems to be a critical point. I mean, I guess the good news with that is as this congregation ages, if we can bring on people in the younger age groups, this is going to be a dynamite, you know, group for full-time retired elders, you know, in about a generation. But our youth and our vitality do have a downside. You know, and as I hear this, you know, my struggle and goal is to break off more time for my family. So as I see, you know, just adding more stuff that you do with your time, I mean, it's a good thing to think about, but for, it's either not realistic or it has serious risk. So I don't know, maybe that we need to think of a different structure or a different organization of how to get things done, with more people each having less time because of the stage they are in their lives with their families and their careers.
It's kind of the great paradox. My wife and I were talking about that this week, which I think applies to what you're talking about. One of the biggest paradoxes is when we're in the success mode with our jobs, having to really try to work towards the success, which takes more time, more energy, is also the time that your kids are younger and you need to be with them more also. Same type of paradox is when the time when you should really be putting money away for retirement is the time you can't afford it. And kind of the same type of thing where we're at a point where we've got so many demands, we're not as established in with our jobs, so we have to almost have to prove to your boss, we have to, you know, do all of that. And that's when your time is needed even more in the family, even with the church and things like that. Dale?
It seems like we're kind of going back and forth between two different things. One is the sort of style of leadership when we talk about what does it demand from a family or servant leadership or so forth, which is an important area. But kind of underlying seemed to be that question of the fact of leadership. I like the word Jeff used a minute ago on initiative, and I would say even underlying initiative is a word that I've been using at work a lot lately, and that's ownership. In other words, one of the things I've noticed is a dynamic church is going to be a church where a lot of people have ownership, and by that I don't mean that, you know, it's my church and things ought to go my way. But I mean that I realize that I have a personal responsibility to God for the success of His church going His way, and I want to give everything I can to make that happen. Whether I'm an elder, whether I'm a deacon, whether I'm a class teacher, whether I'm a small group leader, there's still sort of a sense of, you know, this is my body because I'm a member. I want it to be successful. I'm going to do everything I can within my scope of abilities and realm to make that happen. And I'm going to feel bad if it doesn't happen. I'm going to feel good if it does happen because I'm investing myself in it. I've got an ownership in it. And when you have a lot of people who feel that way, then things are going to go well. And when you've got a lot of people, and unfortunately in our history we've had more than we should have had, who just sort of kind of come in and say, well, this is a good place to come, but if I find something better or if I don't like the way something's going, I'll float out somewhere else. Well, that's when you're not going to have any leadership because people are not investing themselves in it.
Okay, I think that's very good. And I guess maybe the question next is to ask, how do we create an environment or create a church where people have an ownership? I think that's one thing, you know, that's one of the reasons why I'm
I struggled is I've got a real investment, a real ownership. You know, for me, paintball yesterday doesn't go well. I'm discouraged for, you know, a long time through the investment there. And so how do we take those that are not full-time and even take out the elders to, and then you have the rest of the people in the church to have an ownership with the church. And I think with leadership, it takes sacrifice, which takes investment, which brings about an ownership. So how do we do that?
Encourage, and I guess something pops up in my head, but kind of like getting alongside. I think you guys do a great job of doing this, what you're talking about, you know, giving people ownership in the church, you know, just to start out. But I think coming alongside those people and encouraging them, you know, saying, well, here's, have you tried this or have you thought about doing this? And your small groups and all the little individual activities where people get together, you know, in small groups and even in the service, I think it does help. I think it stimulates that in people unless they just really have an obvious, you know, some people go to church just to go to church on Sunday. And so those guys, those people, you're not going to change as readily as more like people who really want to seek out God's will. But like your small groups, I think, and people getting together and praying and providing things for them to do that give them ownership, and then seeking out things to do that give you ownership. Seems like it's kind of tied up in activities sometimes.
Well, I think a key to it is that before they can feel like they have ownership, they have to feel like they're part of the family, and that comes through relationships. So you have to make sure that people are getting connected and feel that bond. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they'll just feel like they're on the outskirts. And
not that any of us would, no one would do this, but I think the Spirit works in a lot of ways too, because I'm convinced, like the comment you made, Dave, about how you've now been freed by this obligation or this burden to be every place, but yet you feel more called, in your case, maybe in the benevolence area. I think that's what we have to pray, that the Spirit will give us that initiative and ownership of an area that we're called to, and also free us from that burden that we feel like, well, what's everybody going to say if Dave and Amy don't show up to things like they used to? You know, those kind of, and I think, you know, God will provide us with internally the drive and the motivation and the time and the initiative to be involved in something we really feel called to do. And at the same time, we have to be free from the obligation of feeling like if we're not there, you know, if everyone who's in the hospital, if we don't visit them, you know, that's okay, you know, maybe, if our calling is something else. And so I think, you know, the Spirit works in ways that we have to put them to work in our own lives too. And that's a big, because each of us have to, I think if we don't feel called to do it, then pretty soon it will become a burden and an obligation, and then it's like a ball, a chain around our neck. And I think God will provide those opportunities if we're really looking for them. And I think at the same time, He'll free us from that burden of feeling like we have to be at every event, which then means we're just busy.
Well, I really like your question, Steve. Maybe if we could even personalize it a little bit, I'd like to know if anybody in here is willing to share if there's been a time in your life where you've not assumed ownership of the church you've been a part of. Maybe you could share with us why you didn't, and that might help us learn something about that. And if there's been a time that you kind of really grew in your assuming ownership, what do you think caused that? You know, if somebody could share that might be helpful.
Yeah, that's great.
Before we came here, we just went to a big church up in Maryland Heights, you know, and
we just went on Sundays and we'd go to service, and you know, really, a lot of the praise was done for you, and you know, they had a real good band and singers and everything, and so we would be more spectators, mm-hmm. and they would kind of invite people to get off the fence, they would call it, you know, and become church members, and they did have small groups and stuff, and we never participated, and so I guess at that point we were just, you know, believers, but just, you know, we'd go on Sunday, and that was really it, you know, that was it, Sunday morning, or Saturday night, you know, which is real convenient, so, and then coming here, it's been different, because even the whole emphasis seems more be involved and doing service and things like that. So I can see there's a real tangible difference between what we experienced up there and what we experience here. Mm-hmm. And so I think as a family, we feel ownership of this church and this community of people.
Dale's question is an interesting one. I hadn't really thought about, but I think the one thing for me was the connection to the church leadership. I feel a lot more engaged if I've got a relationship with the church leaders where I feel like I can approach them and have input into things and make suggestions and feel like they're going to listen. Part of the job of a leader is to build other leaders. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that outside of some personal one-on-one time with individuals, I don't think. I mean, we can have classes, we can go to seminars, we can have lectures, but if I don't know Jeff Earnhardt, I never spend any time with him one-on-one, he's probably not going to be a huge influence in my life.
I think smallness is a factor. To a certain extent. I mean, if you have 10,000 members, it's hard to... The leaders are celebrities then, and they're not people that you relate to, so they don't influence you as much. As here, it's all a lot of one-on-one. And you know what? You see that the leaders are people just like you, kind of struggling to discern and do God's will as best as they can.
Yeah.
I think a big factor, too, in every individual's day-to-day is really earnestly want to know and do God's will. And have it kind of sometimes see that path before themselves, and you know, each day deciding if they're going to head down it or veer off to the side a little bit.
Okay. Kind of goes with 2 Timothy 2:2 with what you're talking about, which kept coming to me as I was trying to figure out what kind of class to prepare. Where Paul is talking to Timothy and says, "And these things you have heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable men." Who will also be qualified to teach others. So the passing on is done from a relationship and teaching and training.
Yeah, I just know in my business life, when I see an individual that I think has leadership potential, mm-hmm. I'm going to make it a point to spend some time with them one-on-one. Maybe we go to lunch together. Maybe we work on a project together. Maybe we take a trip together. Mm-hmm. But that allows you to have a lot more influence both ways. Mm-hmm. It's a time.
Max.
I think sometimes people don't know where to start. You know, you come into someplace new, just not quite sure where to go. And a lot of times it's just a matter of a fact of asking. You know, some people just need to know where to be, you know. And people will tend to take on the role when they have a grasp of where do I belong. And many times people don't even know where that will be ever, you know. They just have to try things out until they find the place where that niche where they feel like that they can lead in that area.
Yeah.
And I know, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, it helped just somebody just saying, "Hey, would you mind doing this?"
Mm-hmm. So being invited to lead by someone.
And once you get that taste of and that feeling of, okay, I have a place of belonging, I have a place to lead, then it gives that responsibility of wanting to do good and wanting to be responsible in that area of leadership.
That's excellent because that's mentoring, you know.
Yeah.
see this and you see the church has a need, would you pray that you're not maybe heading up an effort in this direction? And I'll help you.
So I've called whispering in their ear.
Yeah.
I think you can do this. You can really do this. Rob?
I think Mark said about establishing like a context or an atmosphere of leadership and mentoring people is really important. And another thing, when I was working with a class before, a lot of people, it was a book that we use and Bible things, they all talked about people really want to be led. And they want, and the two main things that they talked about the church leadership was really important was having a very clear vision of what, where is it, the church leadership, where do we want the church to go? And then having a vision, a really kind of good vision of how then are we going to do that. So we have a mission, then how are we going to accomplish that in our community and in our church? And really giving people, being very decisive in that and laying that before the church and allowing them then to see where they fit in and where they can serve. But if we have I think churches, I have a little experience in Abilene, where things, if you don't have, and I think here we've been trying to more clearly define what our core values are and things like that. But if people feel like they don't really know, what are we doing, where are we going, what's the plan, then I think it's hard to get them excited about, wanting to be a part of that when they don't really know what to be a part of and like where it's going. So I think if the vision and then how the, or the mission and then how the mission is going to be carried out, the vision of that of the church is, I think people want that. They want people to say, this is where we're going. And I think Jesus did that. He didn't rule by committee. He didn't lead. He had a vision and a great plan. And he asked people to follow him. He asked people to go with him. And I think at some level we have to have that in the beginning, saying, this is where we're going. And, come help us and figure out how you can help us do that.
Bradley, then Dale.
Also, your dad wasn't here, and I was UT Lewis, where it was a church saying, we need someone, we have the other people willing to help volunteer or to, the supervisor or elder. That's our hard part of finding people. If people don't want to say that before, but everyone's be like, no, be second or third, and including me, especially for, I'd rather be second then for a bit, but also need help set. Part of that, for me, personally, have this feeling of self-worth or a little bit of self-knowledge, I know how to do this role. I'm like, I don't know how to do that. I don't know what to do right now. I have no idea. Or not enough, whatever.
Kind of the process of I do, you watch, we talk. I do, you help, we talk. You do, I help, we talk. I forget where I was. You do, I watch, we talk. Then start that process over again. We just kind of mentoring. You start off down, not the leader, but assisting and then working towards and being trained, which is such a key.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. Good. Dale?
What Rob said kind of triggered a thought, because to me there are two critical things as we grow leadership in a church, and one is the vision that Rob talked about, that people really have a vision for where the church should go, what it should be, and the other is what I would call the foundation, which is understanding the core and the reason and the foundation underneath that vision. And I've been in a lot of churches where they've kind of understood the foundation but haven't had the vision, and that's kind of when you get to be legalistic. And I've been to other churches that have had the vision but haven't had the foundation, and that's when you get to be really shallow and have a lot of hype and it looks good, but underneath there's no depth to it. But when you can get both of those pulled together, then you can have a church that's really reaching out, that's doing something, that's impacting, that's making a difference, because it's also doing that while operating on conviction at the same time. And that's when you really have a powerful group of people, I think. Mm-hmm.
I think leadership qualities, so much of the time we emphasize the outward qualities of leadership skills versus having the inner qualities of character and having a heart for God that would go with the spiritual, which is spiritual leadership. I think that's a key. What is leadership? You know, we've got a lot of different definitions of that, but I want to challenge us to, as a church, to really step out as men of God and take a lead, take an ownership, like as we talked about, and let the leaders know when we're lacking, throwing out that challenge, always throwing out that or whispering in people's ears, you know, you can do this, or even what the need is, or you know, inviting people to do it. And also, I think this is a key also, is men of God, title of the class, is where do you feel called? I think over in Ephesians 4, you know, 2 Timothy and Ephesians 4 kept coming to my mind. It says, it was he who gave some to be apostles, some to be prophets, some to be evangelists, some to be pastors and teachers, to prepare God's people for works of service so that the body of Christ may be built up until we all reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. And so, you know, where do you feel God calling you? And that's one thing that I think is a key. And it doesn't come. It rarely comes without time, quietness with God. Just really praying and just seeking out, you know, where God desires you to be, where God desires you to work. But I think it also comes, you know, I think, as leaders of the church, the elders, and those deacons in different areas and staff, just really inviting. You know, kind of one thing was said, inviting people when they see what the needs are there. I think that's one thing I think we maybe need to continually bring before the church. Here's some needs. And then having people take initiative once they see those needs are there, you know, to do that.
You know, Steve, look, I've been thinking about what Eddie said about, you know, and one of my biggest struggles is the balance in my life. But I have found it really rewarding to, as I leave my family, as I set that out as a goal, I've got the opportunity to be involved in the lives of my guys, my son's friends as well. And so I almost see that as a responsibility I have to, you know, Jim and Freddie, because Michael and David are over at the house all the time. You know, and every time, and so I see that, you know, and to Mark, and to Dan Cryer, and to Dan Trevathan, and Scott Trevathan, and as all those guys end up at our house, or our guys end up at their house, and I'm transporting them, because Matt doesn't have his license yet, you know, as I'm doing that, I'm seeing that as an opportunity for me to lead the church, really, and to be involved as a way of being involved in my own family, but also helping, because I know that the parents at my son's, when he's at their house, they're doing the same thing for my guys, and so I see that really as I can help develop leaders in the church, yet still, I mean, you kind of lead your family, you spend time with your family, you're involved with your family, yet you get an added opportunity to have an influence on the lives of their friends. And I just see that as something that I have seen that opportunity. I mean, you still have to break into the conversation because they're usually not always willing to have you involved in that. But I can talk more with, I can be involved in the conversation when Blake's friends are over than I can when it's just him. Mm-hmm. Because there's more people in the circle kind of thing. And so that's just an extra opportunity I see to help lead my family because I've got other things there. And, you know, other kids talk to you when your own kids don't sometimes. And so that's an opportunity to be involved. Just one more thing that you can say, okay, maybe I do feel called to help lead and develop and mentor leaders, but maybe they're 15 and 16,
yeah.
Not 28 and 29.
Yeah. I think the, I don't know the term, the big L, the little L, doesn't make any difference. Just be an L. And I guess I think of my dad, his example for me growing up, he did not like being in the limelight. He was never up front in the assembly that I remember except one time. they needed a song leader at Southside Church of Christ. My dad never led singing before in his life. He loved singing. His sons were up there laughing at him the whole time he was up there leading singing. But they asked him to do it, and he was willing to give it a try. But and other than that, I don't think he's ever been up in the front. He was always, every week, he was finding all the people to do all that stuff. That was his responsibility. And every week he was out having one-on-one Bible studies. Every week he was up at the office. Well, not every week. He was, whenever there was a need, somebody needed to do work at the church or in somebody's home, he was always there. And I guess he was an little L, but it was a big L. And I just want to challenge each of us, as we try to be men of God, to look for opportunities to lead. And that comes from looking for needs. And Matthew 25, just the sheep and the goats parable. You know, just looking for needs and always kind of having that as a mindset, looking for needs and trying to help as a man of God, as an ambassador of Christ to fulfill those needs. I think that when we have a church with a bunch of men that are like that, that church will grow. Delaney, can you lead us in a prayer?
Father, we want to thank you for being a part of the church, because we know how lonely and without purpose and how much we struggle without that. And we want to thank you for showing us how valuable the church is by dying for it. And Father, we want each one to be the kind of men who take ownership, because we realize that it's your church and you called us to do that, and that we really want to be the kind of people who care how effective the church is and how well it touches the lives of people and how well it serves and how well it grows. And so help us to be, Father, that kind of men, regardless of what capacity of leadership we're in or regardless of what sort of gifts or abilities or skills that you've given us. Help us to care as much about the church as you did, and help us to invest ourselves as much as you did. In the name of Jesus.
Amen. Thank you.